Welcome everyone to another episode of the Charity Charge Show. I'm your host, Stephen Garten. And today I have a really amazing guest, Dave Armon, who is the Chief Executive Officer at 3BL Media. Dave, thank you so much for being on the Charity Charge Show.
Thanks for having me, Stephen. Good to be here.
It is, you know, and for, I always wish we could capture what goes on in kind of the preamble going into the interview, but I want to really thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the time to be on this. You know, as a kind of an outsider, I've been familiar with 3BL's work. We actually utilized your services and you helped get us some good exposure when we officially launched our credit card for nonprofits this past summer. And I really think it's incredible what you all have been able to build over the past, you know, number of years. I know you've been with the organization for about 5.5 years now. So I want to thank you with that. And I guess with that being said, because I look at you and 3BL is a pretty big deal, do you mind sharing with the audience what is 3BL and some examples of the type of work that that you do?
Sure. It's kind of you to say that we're a big deal. We're really a pretty small organization. We'd like to think we have a large footprint with a pretty big global audience, but we're 30 people. The company's based in the western part of Massachusetts. I happen to live in New York, but a lot of folks are in a little town called Northampton, Massachusetts. The company started in 2010, and the 3BL in our name stands for triple bottom line. It's companies that don't just believe in profits on the bottom line, but people, planet, and profits. So this is a service aimed at giving a route to a really powerful audience for companies that are purpose-driven, that are really believing that they can change the world by being good corporate citizens. And there's different ways that people express that nowadays. It used to be CSR, corporate social responsibility, but sometimes people refer to it nowadays as ESG, environmental, social, and governance. That's how Wall Street looks at companies and it determines whether they're good corporate citizens. And then there's, of course, sustainability and social impact. Those are all kind of the containers that we talk about. And we're a content distribution platform that clients use. And the clients are generally large multinational corporations, but also a lot of their nonprofit partners, which is what makes me so excited to do this this podcast with you today, Stephen, because Charity Charge is involved with a lot of nonprofits that are absolutely integral to getting the work done at scale that needs to get done, both with social and environmental, and kind of all types of issues, actually, including business issues. So, it's your podcast. I can certainly answer any questions you have about it, but I'm just excited to be part of your community.
Well, no, I really thank you for saying that. And we're welcome to have you here. And we really do think of things as a community. You know, what I'm curious is, just as you start there, for people that are listening to this podcast that may be working at a large company or even the founder of their own company, how would you define corporate social responsibility and ESG? And maybe just like in the practical lens of some examples that you've seen companies be successful implementing CSR, now as you define it, ESG, into their own companies.
Sure. There's been an evolution, actually, in the way that CSR is looked at. I think in early stages, this was a way that companies could kind of organize their corporate giving and their philanthropy. And then there was a focus, certainly through the 70s and 80s and probably, early 90s on environmental issues and the realization that, our company can't be sustainable if we're throwing out all of this product and wasting all this water and, using all this energy when we could be more efficient and actually save the company money at the same time being better to the planet. So, there was a movement toward, environmental being sort of the lead on CSR and the word sustainability kind of taking over a lot of what corporations were paying attention to. And then, someone woke up and said, this is really all about governance. if companies have great policies and it's formalized and kind of led by the board of directors, and the CEO's compensation is at risk if the company's being irresponsible, then if all of those things are taking place, then the E, the environmental and the social will follow. So, nowadays CSR is less of a separate department inside a company, and for the companies that really have been embracing it and have systematized it across their enterprise, it's much more holistic, and it's part of everybody's marching orders and their bonus plans in companies to. For example, on the equity of women and men and having the same pay, or on issues like, rights for people that have different orientations, rather than just giving, spousal benefits to a married man and woman. The companies now that are embracing LGBTQ rights are ticking that box and being viewed positively by a lot of these rating agencies. In the old days, when you were a public company, you would get rated by Standard & Poor's or Moody's just basically on how good a financial investment you are. Nowadays, there's lots of rating firms like MSCI and ISS and Sustainalytics that look at a company and they make a rating based on how risky is this company to invest in, based on their social policies and their governance, and the way they treat their employees and the way they treat their community and the environment. So it's changed an awful lot. It's not just writing a check to get rid of your guilt anymore. It's really built into the business. And nonprofits are a big part of that, which I'm sure we'll get to in later on in our podcast.
Well, sure. I mean, I think that, they definitely are. As I'm sitting back and kind of reflecting as you're talking through this, I think a lot of it's obviously you're highlighting the evolution of quote CSR and then into, ESG and how companies are thinking about giving back, doing the right thing, purpose, having the ideal governance, et cetera, around a variety of different issues. What I think is interesting as you're saying it, I'm thinking of really large companies that are doing things at scale, big, perhaps publicly traded businesses or companies that have hundreds, of employees and kind of maybe existing stalwarts in their respective industry. I'm curious, what's your perspective on companies that are social impact from day one, that start with maybe something as basic as like, not basic, but also impactful as like a one-for-one type of model. Because to me, that's a little bit of the contrast of what's gotten a lot of popularity and buzz, is the movement towards social impact companies founded on impact first versus, I think what you did a good job of articulating were, existing companies that are seeking to improve, in certain areas related to CSR, ESG. So anyway, a long-winded way of what's your take on kind of the newer rise of companies founded with impact being the reason for existing in the first place?
Yeah, excuse the cough. I'm coming off of a trip to India where I breathed a lot of air that wasn't necessarily the cleanest air in Delhi and in Bombay, Mumbai. So I'm fighting a little bit of a cough here, Stephen. Your question's a good one because I look at these as being kind of disruptor brands, brands like, Harry's or Warby Parker or Tom's, where they give a pair of shoes away for each one that you buy. And, I'm a dad. I have a 23-year-old daughter and a 21-year-old daughter, and they vote with their wallets on companies they think are responsible. And I think a lot of these, disruptor brands that started with a purpose right at their core have done a great job at awakening the large legacy companies that, have massive market share and, were somewhat asleep at the switch in terms of just enjoying the fact that they're the leaders. And then suddenly they realize that there's growth going on in their market sector with products that may or may not be as good as theirs, but they're just, it's based on their purpose. And so There's been a lot of acquisition of these kinds of companies over the years. You know, you see companies like, Harry's. There was an acquisition of Harry's Razors recently. I think the government is sort of saying, hey, wait a minute, that gives too much market share to somebody if they were to buy that. But a few years ago, Tom's, the toothpaste company, got bought out, I think, by Colgate. And that's one reaction to it, is just doing the acquisitions. Unilever bought Ben & Jerry's, right? And the good thing about that acquisition is that awakened everybody inside Unilever to, you know, the benefit of putting purpose at the center of the enterprise. And they, you know, were able to change this.
Let me ask you on that.
And turn it into a purpose-driven company based on the Ben & Jerry's acquisition.
Right. Well, let me ask you that then, a really practical thing that's worth it, because I love the path that you're going down. I actually, within the past, I would say 8 months, I started using Tom's. My girlfriend turned me on to that for the toothpaste. This whole time I've thought that they were, you know, independently owned, and I just felt, I don't know, there was a halo effect to the brand for sure. And the moment I didn't realize that they were bought by Colgate. The moment that you just said that,
you know, I got to take a look at whether Tom's is owned by Colgate, or it could also be owned by Clorox. Let me see who bought Tom's toothpaste. Well, but I know there was a big acquisition a few years ago, and they made a big deal about keeping the brand independent, just like Ben & Jerry's.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting that Ben &
Jerry's. Yeah, it was Colgate.
Okay. So let's riff on that, because I think it's really practical, maybe, you know, as we veer off some of my prescriptive questions and get authentic here. My immediate response when I hear that Tom's is now owned by Colgate, I kind of think of it as like one and the same. And I almost feel like, as a consumer, that they, I'm just going impulsively here, but that they've almost like deceived me. Like, I almost think it would have been maybe better on the box to have said that they're owned by Colgate, why they're owned by Colgate, those types of things. So I'm just curious, your firsthand take on it in general, not is Tom's good or bad or Colgate good or bad, but you're both like your impression and then also what you've seen in the market.
Sure.
You know, what?
Well, I'm a Tom's user too, and I didn't notice any product change in it.
Right.
Although I think the tube back in the day was like made out of aluminum, right? And it would kind of crack open. Now it's a plastic tube, last I saw. But it's go ahead.
Well, I was just to frame it up even more, like, what's your take on companies' success from the consumer's perspective and, well, the triple bottom line after acquisition?
Well, I mean, if there are certainly acquisitions that don't go well, right? The acquiring company takes all sorts of synergies and just, you know, lays off everyone and just, you know, loves having the logo and loves having the revenue, but doesn't really, you know, grab the full spirit of the company and the intent of the founders and all of the, you know, the goodwill and the charitable nature of the company and the sort of the cult feel of the employees who work for a company that's purpose driven. But more and more I see these deals, you know, succeeding and acquisitions of companies like this, like Annie's Organics, you know, which is owned by General Mills, but the spirit of Annie's is still alive and well. I went to their facility in Oakland or Berkeley, somewhere in Northern California, you know, California recently. And, I didn't feel like I was in General Mills offices. It felt like I was in a company that really values being a nature foods leader. And I see that happening now with General Mills in the way that they talk about themselves as a, not a big food company, but a big player in the agriculture system that wants to do it right, all the way from soil health to like the way they treat, pollinators and bees. So it seems like it's a good thing for the big corporations to be buying these companies and to learn from them, as opposed to just watch their market share erode.
Right. No, absolutely. It's a fair point and a good perspective on that. I want to get back to 3BL for a second here, because I think you did a tremendous job, you know, articulating to the audience the evolution of CSR and ESG within companies. But to me, it's kind of like, you know, the analogy, and I may butcher this right now, but, you know, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make any noise? So when I look at 3BL, the real existence and the value add for that is you're helping share and get the message out about the great work that these companies are doing as it relates to their CSR and ESG initiatives. So could you talk a little bit about some of the practical things that 3BL helps companies do from a messaging perspective and your opinion on, you know, the value add of 3BL in this space?
Sure. I mean, at a basic level, we're encouraging companies to not worry so much about being perceived as not being humble. There's a lot of companies that are concerned. They just want to quietly do the work. But in today's day and age, you know, there's an expectation that you're contributing back to society. And you know, that was said by Larry Fink from BlackRock when in his big famous letter to CEOs about the fact that we don't want to just invest in profitable companies. You have to actually do something good for the world. And then the other one has been the Business Roundtable last year, which there were, you know, some 200 CEOs or something that signed this letter saying basically, you know, we have to do more than generate profits and take a look at how we're contributing to society. So what we do is we have a formula for brands to take their content that they're already creating around sustainability or social impact and distribute it over a network that we've built. So the network, you know, reaches the financial community through Bloomberg terminals and Reuters terminals. And there's more than 100,000 people that have registered to receive this newsletter that goes out every morning. It's free. And anyone who wants to get it can just go to 3blmedia.com/news. And register for the 3BL Media News Alert. And it's just the stories from the last 24 hours, but there's nonprofits in there and there's corporations doing, you know, talking about things other than their earnings and their products. You know, it's not bragging. It's talking about their volunteerism activities and innovation and STEM, you know, STEM and all sorts of things that are going to make the world a better place. So our system involves giving them access to a platform they can log into. And they can distribute something as easy just as an infographic or a photo or video or a link to a report with a summary about what the report is about. As opposed to my old days, I spent 20 years at PR Newswire. I was president and COO at PR Newswire, and it was just press releases pretty much. And, you know, that's kind of passe now, the way that people communicate. And corporations and nonprofits all have great websites where they can post these blog posts and this content online. But it kind of just sits there and goes to their known audience, the regular visitors to the site. And what we've done is put together, you know, we have like 500,000 first level followers on our social handles. And then, you know, about 100 widgets that are up with our newsfeed on third party websites where the Sustainerati gather. So, you know, when you're using our platform to push out your little sort of snack size tidbits about your social impact work, you're getting traffic back to your content, and you know, hopefully people it helps with your public image. It helps with your employees if you're trying to recruit employees or retain your workforce for them to be proud about the stuff that they're seeing constantly going by in social about their company. And so those are some of the benefits that clients enjoy when they use us.
Well, and I'm on it right now, this 3blmedia.com/news, and I'm seeing you know, the things that you're talking about, I'm seeing up close and personal, because there's a variety of different, there's some news from whether it's, I'm looking right now, you know, America's Charities or GM, Bacardi Limited, T-Mobile, Key Insights, Benevity, Chevron, UPS, Schneider. I mean, I could go on and on because it's just filled with.
Yeah, it's about 50 pieces of content every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I try to do also, I mean, coming back to my holistic mission too at Charity Charge, is trying to spread, and that's a lot of what this podcast is about, is positivity. I think that the things that you articulated are tremendous, obviously from the B2B side, but I got to tell you, to anyone that's listening on just a purely humanistic element, I encourage you to sign up for this newsletter and also go to, you know, 3blmedia.com/news, because I just feel good reading about all these positive things. I think that whatever side of politics you fall on, and you know, with scares of the coronavirus and just other things that are always happening in the world, it's important to take some time out to focus on the positive. And that's what I'm being flooded with. So, you know, I want to give a huge, I guess, kind of shout out to Dave, the whole team at 3BL, and all the companies doing this really positive work, because I always think it's about, the bigger picture, right? And the impact. And I think what a lot of these companies are doing with the conduit being 3BL is just sharing a lot of positivity and good stuff. And I think, you know, with those kind of good vibes, it's inspiring for other people. So that's a little bit of a,
thanks for that.
Yeah, it's the truth.
It's not,
you know,
it's not the kind of news that you're going to see on the 6 o'clock local news where the motto is, if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, we're kind of the counter to that, where, you know, there's just good stuff getting done. And this is a good channel to let people know, you know, some of it is a little difficult and challenging. And you know, it's not, frankly, it's not good PR. It's like a company that maybe has challenges with their supply chain, and they're letting people know, like, we're working on it, but it's going to take 5 years because this is very messy and very big, and we're not in complete control of it. But it's this transparency by these big multinational companies that is increasingly buying them, you know, goodwill and respect, both from Wall Street and their own employees. You know, about this whole sort of brands taking stands movement. We have a conference that focuses on that called 3BL Forum. And companies that are just sitting by and trying to be nice and neutral and quiet on things are getting called out by their employees. So we're enjoying that as a kind of a resurgence of interest in what we do as well.
That's awesome. I'm pulling that up too. It looks like you're going to have that in New York, October 6th to 7th of this year.
That's right. 3BL Forum. Yep. We've had it in Washington the last 3 years. And it's one of the best parts of that conference, honestly, Stephen, is when we give away a Responsible CEO of the Year award. And we don't charge anything to nominate. The period for nominations is still open. So you can go to the 3BL Forum site and nominate a CEO candidate. And the judging is done by the former winners. So it's CEOs who get a packet of finalists each year, and they vote on which one would be the best lifetime achievement winner versus, CEO of the year. And we've had, like, the CEO of Aflac was up there, and he talked about giving, you know, more than $100 million to childhood cancer charities. And what a nice guy. We had the woman who runs the Girl Scouts up on stage last year, Sylvia Acevedo. And she's literally a rocket scientist who, you know, was in a good position to have enough, she basically wanted to give back after her career was good to her. So now they've created like more than 50 merit badges around science. And they're really pushing girls to think about themselves in occupations that have traditionally been dominated by men. So we're enjoying this little spot as the convener around brands taking stands.
I think it's amazing. And I actually love how you just finished that word, the convener, because I want to ask you, you know, and I hope that this next question will be good for anyone that's, in the early stages of building their company, nonprofit, or social impact company. Is, you know, I still feel humbled of, you know, we've been at this at Charity Charge for in market for almost 4 years now. But, you know, I'm constantly trying to look up to individuals like yourself that have candidly decades more experience than I do, leading and growing organizations. One of the things that I've considered doing at Charity Charge is trying to continue to figure out ways that we can be that convener and that touch point. We've got thousands upon thousands of consumer cardholders across the country. We've got hundreds and hundreds of nonprofits that are using, you know, our corporate card. And then we've got a really incredible network of friends, you know, part of our community. And I consider you one of those. So I've tried to figure out ways that we have our product and our service, so to speak, in the same way as, you know, we talked a bit about 3BLs, like traditional, when we were talking about the 3BLmedia.com/news. Now it's really inspiring to see what you're doing with this forum of, like, actually taking it, what you've been doing, which is online, and make it offline. What are some of the things, I'm just curious, on the pure, like, operational, like, growth of 3BL, have you seen or value add about creating this offline convening point?
Well, I mean, it's certainly complex to try to do a multi-day conference in a city where you're not headquartered. But we were fortunate that a woman that I had worked with years and years ago, named Lynn Filderman, she was the CMO at America's Charities. She was involved in a conference called Charities at Work, and I spoke at her conference, and she just was so organized and very direct on what she expected from us, and insistent that we curate and do a good job in practicing, but she was also very human and very funny and pleasant along the way. And I realized, like, if I ever had a conference, I needed somebody like that to run it. So I was able to pull Lynn into 3BL and have her work on that for us. So I think it's about just having talent to do it, having a vision of what you want to accomplish. And you know, you have a community that's enthusiastic. I listened to that podcast that you did last week with Sam Porritt from Falling Forward, and you know, it brought a tear to my eye to hear his story and how he persevered. And it's that kind of content that can certainly be successful on stage. You just have to do it at a price point and at a spot that makes sense for your community. And I don't know where that is for you. You're in Austin. I certainly have never turned down an invitation to Austin, Stephen. So wouldn't be a bad place to start.
Well, I'd love to have you as a speaker when we do it. So you're welcome to come to Austin. You know, I actually really appreciate, I think this is value add to anyone, but what you just said there of starting it when you had mentioned, and I see it now in the footer, you know, Lynn Filderman, we'll give her a shout out, you know, who's listed as the executive producer for the 3BL forum. That's the biggest thing that I'm learning, is just continuing to
find your team.
Exactly. And where a lot of people lately have said to me, asked me this question, so either our clients or just, you know, just kind of other people that I'm meeting in the community that see what I'm doing in the financial services industry, they'll say, oh, are you a fintech entrepreneur? Like, are you obsessed with fintechs? And that's not at all. I mean, you know, my answer is like, no, actually I could care less about fintech. You know, I'm just trying to do something that brings positivity and helps nonprofits. But I think that I'm filled with so many ideas of how we can expand that. But I've got to have the right person to be able to execute on the idea. And I think your response of what you just said there with finding the right person and Lynn that can lead this, is where I'm finding all the leverage points for our growth, you know? And so with that, you know.
Yep. And we all know that Austin, Texas has a little known conference, it's called North by something. So you know, you could potentially, you know, find some talent there. Someone has put on an event before, like South by Southwest, and, you know, have them work with you on something, but start small. I mean, we do little, 2-hour conferences in little cities, not little cities, but you know, we've done them in Atlanta and in Dallas and in Chicago, and you'd go to a corporate headquarters and they're happy to give up their space, and you know, bring a couple of great speakers and let them speak. And you know, that may be a way to start. Just find a few cardholders that happen to have, some real estate that, you know, where you can put 100 chairs and, find someone willing to donate apples or bananas or coffee, and then you're off to the races.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's funny you say that, because I was going to wait to plug it, but we're actually having, which you're certainly invited to, or anyone from your team, but we will be hosting two events at South by Southwest, which is in March. Our first one will be at...
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, Saturday, March 14th at Clive Bar on Rainy Street, and then Saturday, March 21st at Luster Pearl on Rainy Street. And you know, we should give a huge shout out to Bridget Dunlap. She's the owner of both of those bars and has been a friend, and a lot of other people, Matt Weinhold and Christian Hawkins, et cetera, that are part of her bar and restaurant group. You know, they were happy to host us, and we really appreciate that. And we'll be doing the event on the 14th with one of our other friends, Mission Box. So yeah, we're getting started in kind of little ways, you know, just as you had articulated. So
Well, send me the link to the sign-up page for that, or just some details, and I'll share it on my social media. And anyone that I know that's going to be at South By, I'll send them over to your event.
Yeah, that would be incredible. I really appreciate that. And, you know, Dave, this was really incredible to have you, you know, on our podcast. I know we covered a bunch of things. In closing here, I know we talked about some different links and such, but if people want to learn more, about your work and how it can help their company or organization, where can they find you?
Yeah, I think you can email me anytime. It's Darmon, Darmon. My name is Dave Arman, but it's Darmon at 3, the number 3, and then B as in boy, L as in Lincoln, media.com, triple bottom line media. And you can go to 3BLmedia.com to look at our content, as we talked about earlier. We also have a really nice news site. Sustainable business is the topic. It's called Triple Pundit. And Triple Pundit puts out new content every day, and it's worth taking a look at editorially and getting inspired by that content. So I'm happy to talk to anybody, and I'm on Twitter at Davey Armin.
That's awesome. And for everyone listening, it really is true, because Dave called me up last week, and you know that was kind of how logistically this all came together. So Dave, thank you so much for being a guest and being a part of our community. I look forward to forging, you know, a really warm, long-term friendship with you and your team at 3DL. And to everyone that continues to listen along, you know, I really want to, you know, first and foremost, just thank everyone for being a part of our community. And it's really been a pleasure to continue to do this podcast and share things with you. So thanks so much.
Well, same to you. Good luck with Charity Charge, Stephen. And I'm glad to know your audience and you personally. So I'm happy to join again with an update a year from now. So I'll put it on mute and let you close the podcast out. But I just wanted to say thank you.
Oh, I love that. You know, we'll dedicate this episode to one of our cardholders, Russ Briscoe, who has been encouraging me to have repeat guests and kind of follow some of the Joe Rogan format. So we would love to have you as a repeat guest. And I thank you so much. So we're going to finish this episode here. And thanks again to everyone for being a part of our community. Bye for now.